Welcome to the Sound of Economics, Bruegel's podcast. In today's director's cut, I'm joined by Bill Reinsch, who is the Scholl Chair in International Business of the CSIS think tank in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
So Bill has served for 15 years as president of the National Foreign Trade Council, where he led efforts in favor of opening markets and support of the Export-Import Bank and Overseas Private Investment Corporation. And he also worked from 2001 to 2016 as a member of the U.S.-China Economic Security Review Commission, so very well placed to talk about U.S.-China trade relations. And we are also joined by Uri Dadosh, who is a senior fellow and who is actually today also in Washington and sits together with Bill in the CSIS studio. Welcome, Uri.
Thank you, Gunther.
So in today's podcast, we want to discuss the U.S.-China relation with a focus on trade, but not exclusively trade. And we want to reflect on what the evolution of this relation means for the European Union. The latest development is, of course, that U.S. President Trump has decided to massively increase and widen the scope of tariffs imposed on imports from China. In fact, President Trump's decision to increase tariffs on $200 billion U.S. dollars worth of imports from China from 10 to 25% and his threat to do the same on the U.S. imports from China, on the remaining U.S. or other U.S. imports from China, it certainly marks a new phase in the deterioration of the international trade relations since his election. And we just hear today that China it has decided to retaliate against that increase in tariffs. Of course, China's renminbi currency suffered its worst drop in one day since August last year, and global equity markets fell. U.S. is now trying at some level to do damage control. U.S. President Trump's top economic advisor, Kudlow, sought to contain the fallout from the escalation of trade tensions with Beijing. But I don't think that's really the president's view. I mean, he was very active on Twitter, again, writing Sunday evening on the 12th of May, "We are right where we want to be with China. Remember, they broke the deal with us and tried to renegotiate. We will be taking in tens of billions of U.S. dollars in tariffs from China." End of quote from Twitter. So let's discuss all of this. And I want to turn first to Bill to get really the U.S. perspective on all of this. Bill, let me start with you. What do you think does President Trump want to achieve with his latest, if I can say so, escalation? And do you think he will succeed?
Well, he has only one tactic, which is always to push harder and escalate. He doesn't seem to know any other tactic. I should say there's broad public support in the United States for his diagnosis of the problem. There's broad disagreement about his methods, but most people here believe that he's identified problems with Chinese behavior that are important and serious. And the purpose of the negotiation is to try to persuade the Chinese to change their behavior with respect to theft of intellectual property, forced technology transfers, discrimination against foreign companies operated in China, massive subsidies, and favoritism toward state-owned enterprises. The president himself always talks about reducing the bilateral trade deficit as well. But I think for his advisors, and I think also for him, the most important thing is dealing with what I just listed, which we refer to as sort of the structural issues. The problem he's beginning to understand, I think, is that the Chinese are not going to give him what he wants, because what he has demanded would require them to really change the focus of their economy and make it a much more market-oriented economy than Xi Jinping wants it to be. And because it would reduce the party's control over the society, which for the Communist Party officials in China is the worst thing that you can possibly do. What's been going on is the president's tactic is simply to press harder, this last go-round, last week, the newly increased tariffs, I have to say, was not entirely a fantasy on his part. The Chinese did signal that they were pulling back from some commitments that the United States thought they had made. I'm not sure the Chinese thought they'd made them, but the United States certainly thought they made them. And so they found the negotiations unraveling. The president's response was more tariffs. And the Chinese response this morning, our time, was also more tariffs. So, you know, we have an agreement that 2 weeks ago, according to the president, was nearly ready, to one that had fallen apart, to one as of last Friday that we were still talking, but not making any progress.
So do you think, from a U.S. point of view, there is, of course, all of the concerns on the Chinese economy, on the way they operate, the state-owned enterprises, forced technology transfer. And as you say, there is a pretty bipartisan view in the United States that China needs to change. And one could always say somewhat naively, this president assumed that China would change, which is, and why do I say somehow naively? Because it would be a huge thing for China to do all the things that the U.S. president wants. So given that background and sort of the current feeling on the U.S. side that this is not happening in China, do you think it was the right strategy to move ahead and escalate the trade war? Do you think in the end China will give in?
I don't think they'll give in to the extent that we've demanded. I think they can't without imperiling party control. I think they will. I mean, the outlines of an agreement reflected, I thought, a good bit of progress on the trade deficit front. They're willing to buy a lot of stuff, probably more stuff than we make, which will produce an interesting irony. I think they will make some concessions in some areas. They promised President Obama twice they wouldn't steal intellectual property. They certainly can promise Trump once they won't steal intellectual property. They can make some other commitments, because a lot of the things we're asking them to do are actually good for them economically. And I think their economists would tell you that as well as other economists. But they won't do everything we want, and the president's going to have to make a decision, which I think is going to cause him some political difficulties here. You know, his decision is to either to accept an agreement that falls short of what he wants, or to walk away and continue the tariff war. I think either choice will open the door for the opposition to accuse him of being soft on China if he accepts a weak deal, a poor negotiator, either one. And it'll encourage the Democrats to point out that the actions he's taken has caused a lot of pain to Americans. It may have caused more pain to Chinese, but it certainly caused a lot of pain to Americans, particularly farmers. And what he's been telling our farmers is hang in there, short-term pain, long-term gain. But if he walks away, there's only short-term pain. There's no long-term gain. And I think he creates a political problem for himself down the road if that's the choice he makes.
Well, let's turn to Uri to get perhaps the view from him, or perhaps from a European point of view, but also a more global, perhaps developing countries perspective. Also, I mean, Uri, how worried are you about this escalation of the trade tariff? I mean, I think a trade tariff war. I think outright trade war that we are experiencing at the moment. And where do you see this? Where do you see the EU in this conflict?
Well, I'm extremely worried about the escalation. It's possible that we end up with a win-win solution at the end of the day. Maybe a month from now. Maybe 2 months from now. Maybe when Xi Jinping and Donald Trump meet in Tokyo for the G20 summit in the middle or at the end of June. That could be a natural next point. I mean, they appear to have gone a long way already. So I don't want to rule out the possibility that this thing will be diffused in the not too distant future. But history tells us that when tariffs are imposed, it's difficult to change them. And of course, it's extremely disruptive to have tariffs in the first place. People start, reorganizing their investments, their production lines, their supply lines, et cetera, et cetera. So it's extremely costly, these steps that have already been taken. In terms of the impact on Europe, I'm aware of the argument that this will create some opportunities for Europeans to gain market share at the expense of both the Chinese and the Americans on their respective markets as they discriminate against each other. But I read the overall impact on Europe as being unmistakably negative and probably quite significantly negative. The main effects will be through investor confidence, which includes, by the way, investor confidence in the United States and China, which are very important markets, the two most important markets for Europeans, but also at the global level. And you're seeing this already in some numbers, and of course in the volatility of the stock markets, etc. And then the second negative effect will be this is another nail in the coffin of the multilateral trading system, because this dispute, which is very serious among the two largest traders in the world with the European Union, this dispute is occurring totally outside the WTO context, which it shouldn't be in the first place, and furthermore gives a terrible signal that strengthens protectionist interests, and they're always there around the world.
Well, Uri, can I push you? I mean, you and I, we wrote on this conflict and, you know, what should be the EU strategy in all of this, and perhaps just to get your views for our listeners straight. I mean, some of the concerns that the United States government has on China are shared by US policymakers. There's also, I mean, a joint initiative between the US, Europe and Japan to try to ensure that China respects intellectual property more than it does currently. So would it be appropriate at this stage for the EU to just side with the United States and take on China, perhaps in the hope also to avoid later on a trade war between Europe and the US? Or do you rather think we should be pursuing a strategy where we do express our concerns vis-a-vis China, while at the same time do point out to the United States that they are actually undermining the global multilateral trading system, which is such an important institution, not just for Europe, but also especially also for smaller emerging economies?
Well, as you know very well, Guntram, Europeans have similar concerns to the Americans about Chinese practices. However, I would express a view that in general, these practices, the effect of these practices on the European and American economies tend to be exaggerated. That is my view. I mean, I could go into some detail on that. They're there. These issues are certainly there. But when you add up, you know, what is the economic impact of these practices on U.S. and European welfare, I'm not convinced that these practices are so damaging that that the game is worth the candle, that it is worth doing, engaging in these extreme measures, which of course are retaliated against. So that's number one. Number two, perhaps on this point, I'm sure
there could be a debate between you and Bill, because Bill, I think you mentioned that you are actually thinking that a lot of these practices are quite harmful for U.S. farmers, you mentioned, but the U.S. economy more generally. Can you try to sort of explain to our listener why do you think these practices are so harmful for the U.S. or, for that matter, also for the European economy? And we have a bit of a debate between the two of you on that point.
Yes, because I don't entirely agree with you, Uri, on this. First of all, I would say the biggest in this whole thing, probably the biggest mistake President Trump has made is to fail to build coalitions. We have a situation where, as you pointed out, many Europeans agree with us on the problem, as do Japanese, as do Australians, as do New Zealanders, as do many people in Southeast Asia. Not that they'll be very loud about it, but there's widespread agreement that China poses a serious challenge long-term to the trading system, yet our administration has done nothing to try to enlist all of those people to speak with one voice, which I think has made everything much more complicated. I think where I would differ from Uri on impact is long-term versus short-term. I think there's a feeling here that the short-term impact of the tariffs so far has not been great in economic terms, that the political impact has probably been greater than the economic impact. But the Americans are really looking at not the short-term. They're looking at Chinese policy intentions for the long-term. And they look at the 13th five-year plan, and they look at the brochure that was produced, Made in China 2025, which the Chinese conveniently have stopped talking about, but it's still there. And what does Made in China 2025 say? It says that for the technologies that we've identified, and there are, I think, 14 of them in critical areas, our goal of the Chinese government is to build world champion manufacturers of those items. And what they're going to do once we've done that is they're going to drive the foreigners out of China, and then they're going to drive the foreigners out of business in the rest of the world, that their intent is to outcompete the rest of us. Actually, that's fine as a goal. I mean, countries can aspire. The question for other countries is – there are two questions for other countries. One, is China going to do that by adhering to the rules, or is it going to break the rules, mostly rules about subsidies? And second, what are the rest of us going to do to make ourselves more effective competitors when we face that situation? Just to give you an example, you know, the Chinese have earmarked $150 billion U.S. dollars in subsidies to build 32 new semiconductor fabrication plants. That's going to produce enormous global overcapacity in semiconductors. We are facing in semiconductors some years down the road exactly what we've experienced in steel, exactly what we've experienced in aluminum. And 10 years down the road, we're going to see the same thing in large mainframe aircraft. And you're going to be hearing from Airbus, just like we're going to be hearing from Boeing. I think what our president is trying to do is to prevent this long-term situation from developing, because it's one that does not advantage European manufacturers. It does not advantage American manufacturers.
Uri, what's your reply to that point?
You know, it's all directionally correct. I ask two questions when I hear those arguments. Number one, is a government program of this kind likely to yield the huge results that are being pointed to? I don't know. I mean, my historical experience, and maybe I spend too much time, you know, in Europe and looking at the European situation, is a lot of these state efforts are, goals, objectives, etc. A lot of them don't materialize. The state-owned enterprise sector in China is very well known to be extraordinarily inefficient. Subsidization and industrial policy, I've looked at this I don't know how many times at the World Bank, is generally not a policy that works or functions. So I have a question about the actual effectiveness of this, and in the end, what is the dollars and cents impact? Some of the things that China is doing, like investing in technology, investing in innovation, they're now the biggest producers of patents and scientific articles, et cetera, maybe the number two just after the U.S. on patents. I don't remember the exact numbers. A lot of this stuff will eventually become, as United States knowledge and European knowledge has become, part of the public domain, part of the world's endowment of knowledge. So we are looking, I believe we're looking at China too much in a mercantilist mindset, just looking at the competitive effects and not focusing enough on the big import opportunities in China, the big market opportunities in China. China now runs a current account that is balanced, which is very different from Europe, okay, which has a very big surplus, number one. Number two, China is actually a small exporter when you relate it to its population. China exports about one quarter per person what the United States exports, and one-twelfth what Germany exports per capita. This is an economy which is developing, which is going to develop, and it's going to provide huge opportunities, is already providing very large opportunities. And so we are too focused on the competitive aspect. And I think it is in the interest of some organizations and companies to push that view, which I understand. If I were in their shoes, that's what I would do. But I look at the broader picture, and the broader picture tells me, is this game really worth the candle? Do we have to put the whole trading system in danger in order to fix this problem? And can we do it in a better way? For example, a friend of mine has suggested, I won't cite his name because he didn't give me the license to do so. A friend of mine has suggested, okay, if we're very concerned about Chinese requiring investors in China to go with joint ventures, let's do the same to them. That would be a proportionate response. Let's say that if you want to come and invest in Europe and you want to invest in the United States, you have to do it on a joint venture basis, with, some kind of proportionate response rather than this brute force approach to tariffs, which endangers all of us.
Yeah. So Bill, if I can ask you, I mean, you mentioned the U.S. failure was not to get allies and mobilize allies for its strategy. Why was it dismissed from the outset to do something at the level of the WTO? After all, if you look at the Protocol of Accession of China, some of these things are already mentioned, and the WTO does have some mechanisms to rein in subsidization, for example, and there's an agreement on subsidies and countervailing measures. And these things don't work perfectly, but at least there's some sort of a framework. Why not try through the WTO to improve that? Why was that dismissed? And do you think it was a good idea?
Well, I should begin by saying I'm not recommending the president's strategy here or the president's tactics. I mean, I don't think they're going to work. What I said in the beginning was I thought there was widespread agreement here on his diagnosis of the problem. I don't think there's widespread agreement on the particular method he's chosen to deal with it. And I think Uri's right that it's not likely to be successful. There are several ways to go. And I think on the WTO question, I mean, I can explain what the administration thinks, which is not what I think, but what they think on that is that the challenge that China poses is simply too big for the rules, that there's too many things they do that are either not clear-cut violations of the rules, or the system is simply not equipped to deal with a problem of this magnitude. We are litigating some cases in the WTO against them, and most of the time we win. They've litigated some against us, and as As you know, most of the time in the WTO, the plaintiff wins because governments don't bring cases unless they've got pretty good ones. So we've been winning. The Chinese win some. I think our administration would say that's not ultimately going to be the place where these problems get solved, because the problems are bigger than the institution, and the institution takes too long to solve them anyway, and that we're not certain that it's going to produce the outcome that we want. That said, I wouldn't say that you should entirely despair about the multilateral system. One of the elements of building coalitions, as I said, which is our failure, but if we ever get that right, you know, building a coalition doesn't just mean that you get, you know, everybody in Europe to send Xi Jinping a letter, all saying the same thing that we're saying. Building a coalition really means building institutions, law and rule-based institutions that are based in rule of law and underpin the Western trading system. In other words, rules on intellectual property, rules on protection of intellectual property, rules on data flows, rules on state-owned enterprises, you know, a whole bunch of rules that the Chinese would have to adhere to if they wanted to access these coalitions' markets. That's what TPP was about, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's actually what TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, was also about. Basically, and Obama saw this. It took him a long time to figure it out, to be fair about it. But ultimately, Obama realized that the way to build a united front with Europe on China is not just, you know, with demarches to the Chinese government. It's by building a transatlantic institution that would create, you know, the largest middle class consumer market in the world by far. And surround it with rules that the Chinese would have to adhere to if they wanted to come into the market. That's what we failed to do. And frankly, one of the reasons we failed to do that is because there's not enough support for it in Europe. Now, maybe they're coming around on that, but the bigger picture here is for all of us in the West to be working together, and that's not happening. And you're right. It would be nice to go to the WTO, and I wouldn't personally rule that out at all. But this administration doesn't think that it's a very productive short-term step.
Basically, there are two big differences. Number one, the United States president is a protectionist. There are no two ways about it. So he has a completely different world outlook than whatever the head of or the ruling councils of Europe are. That's number one. Number two, the United States definitely sees, and perhaps correctly so, China as a geopolitical rival. There is no reason for the United for Europe to view China as a geopolitical rival. And unfortunately, these issues are all intertwined with the present trade policies of the United States.
Well, we could go on for another hour, and I was certainly intrigued to talk about also what Bill meant to say, that basically it's the West against China, and I think there's certainly a big question mark what the West is nowadays and whether the West is still what it used to be, a strong alliance across the Atlantic. Certainly here in Europe, there's a lot of worry about U.S. Policies, not just in trade matters, but in many, many other fields, and what it means for the European Union. So one is much less certain on this side of the Atlantic about the strengths of the West, and China in that sense has become already a big player, and the way the U.S. And European relations develop will have, I think, quite a bit of impact on also the EU's approach to China. All of this could be discussed, I think, another 1 or 2 hours, but I'm afraid our time is up. So let me thank you, Bill. Let me thank you, Uri, for taking the time. It was great talking to you, and I hope we'll chat another time soon. Thank you very much for joining.